it is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law.
See terms and conditions. 18 plus. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor with Professor H.A. Mackinder, International Relations, commenting on five capitals, five points of view, and then we turn to the American presidential contest already underway. Professor, the headlines from Europe this weekend are anything but dull. Cracks starting to appear. How the failure of SVB has rocked European banks. I've already mentioned that Warren Buffett can't stay very long off stage. He's getting into the question of what's next for European banks, especially the big ones, all looking to help or bail out Credit Suisse. We also have banking crisis here for our regional banks, First Third, and First Republic Bank is said to be in trouble. The rescue package did not please the markets on Friday. So, Brussels' point of view, the EU has a banking crisis. NATO is also the EU. It's a double capital, Brussels. The big news last week was not the EU supporting or finding money to support Ukraine. It was Christine Lagarde, the head of the European Central Bank, moving interest rates up another half point. Mon Dieu. And so what we have now is a split-screen crisis in Europe. You get the reports from the battlefield, but that has become numbingly familiar. And then you get reports from the money markets and the markets in the morning about the crisis. Your measure of Brussels, does it have the ability to do two things at once? Find money for the war and find money at all in the money markets?
Well, I'm not the person to talk to about bank crises, except that I understand what's going on. As I understand it, the Saudis have a very large chunk of Credit Suisse.
9.9%. They wouldn't take the additional point because that would mean the regulators would show up in Riyadh.
Yeah, we don't want that. I mean, at least they're sensible enough to understand that. But I think that the Europeans are going to manage. They do have a lot of money. The place where there really is a terrible banking crisis is China, but that hasn't quite hit yet. Although you probably saw that Mr. Mobius, who is a billionaire American economic pundit, has a lot of money in the Chinese banks, and they won't let him withdraw it and bring it to America. He's now saying, well, you know, that's not fair. That's not what you told me. And he's telling Americans to be very cautious about putting any money in China because they may not let you withdraw it. And certainly Chinese are not allowed to withdraw. So I think as long as we have politics as they are now with the ability of countries to increase the money supply at will, regardless of the behavior of the GNP and so forth, we're going to keep having banking crises.
Do you acknowledge, but, Professor, that Ukraine is not the number one thought in the morning in Europe right now?
I think that's absolutely right. Although I think it's a contest between Washington and Europe, which one is paying less attention to Ukraine, which is, I will say, this is in fact the defining crisis. Here we are in the third decade of the 21st century, and just as World War I, which was in the second decade of the last century, in effect laid out the political map for Europe through at least the 1950s, so the conclusion of how the war in Ukraine ends is going to define Eurasian politics and European security and so forth, and the security of other countries, well beyond, 50 years from now, which brings us close to the end of this century. But here, let's get back to Brussels. I've been saying for some time that I expect some kind of fissure or split between the soft NATO, which begins, amazingly enough, with Germany. If anyone should be aware that they're threatened, it should be the Germans, but they haven't spent a cent of the huge amount they appropriated to strengthen their military. It's very un-German. But what I'm looking at is the so-called Bucharest 9, which is the countries that are right around Ukraine. Almost they're all ex-Soviet satellites, and they understand that unless Putin is stopped in Ukraine, he will attempt to extend into Romania, Moldova, Poland, above all, the Czech Republic, and so forth. And to the B9, I would add three, namely Finland, Sweden, and also Britain, which has a particular view of this that goes back to the days when the North Sea and the Sound and the Straits and the Baltic and all the rest were very, very crucial. Now, we've seen that the Poles have they've simply flown some MiG-27s over to the Ukrainians to help them. And the Slovakia is not a very big country, but the Slovaks have also contributed MiG-27s. And I think those former Soviet occupied countries they've got a lot of MiG-27s. And while we're trying to figure out whether that we should sell them Rafale for delivery in 10 years or F-16s delivery in 20 years, they're just sending the MiG-27s over because these are planes that the Ukrainians know how to fly, and they're perfectly capable aircraft, and they can be upgraded in certain ways. So more of them are coming. And what this manifests is the sense of urgency that the Bucharest 9 plus 3 feel about stopping Russia, and the kind of lackadaisical attitude of the Western NATO countries, and increasingly the United States. We'll come to that in a minute. The final thing I would mention here is that Turkey, which is a sort of an imponderable in many ways, Turkey has just Turkey has approved the accession of Finland into NATO, and this means that Sweden is going to have to wait. But I think that Turkey's attitude is very important, and the word is that Turkey is now focusing more intensely on the Black Sea, because the Black Sea has been a traditional area of contention, and the Turks, of course, have the keys to the kingdom. They control the Bosporus and the Dardanelles, and they have one of the strongest militaries, and then I say in NATO. But the Turks are much better fighters. They have a much bigger army, and they're well-equipped, say, than France. They don't have nukes. But
now Professor, you mentioned Slovakia and Poland, and you mentioned members of NATO. But what I don't hear is a combination that can win the war. Does NATO want to win the war, or does it want Russia not to win the war? There are distinctions here.
No, I think that's absolutely right. But unfortunately, with wars, as with football games, or as with the Super Bowl, I mean, you either win or you lose. And the word from Washington is that our administration has now decided that the only way we're going to end this war is to win it. And by winning it, I would mean defeating Russia. And this is a very hard thing to define, but it means...
I listen to you.
It, mean,
if Washington wants to win, does NATO want to win? I understand that we're the U.S. has all the strength in NATO, but it's an organization that works only with unanimity. Do you measure that NATO is unanimous in wanting to win this war? They have they need to imagine life after the war.
Well, I would say that NATO is not unanimous in wanting NATO to win the war. I think they want Ukraine and the United States to win the war for them. But they don't, the Western NATO countries don't feel menaced by what's going on in Ukraine to anything like the degree that they should. So, as I say, a new grouping is emerging, consisting of the Bucharest 9 countries, which are all NATO members, but are much more hardline than NATO, and then Finland and Sweden, which, remember, were both neutral until this war got them to join, to try to join NATO, and Britain, which is very hard to call. But their military, although weak and small, they have some very smart strategists, and Mr. Sunak, who of course is a bit of a windsock, he has been surprisingly hardline. So I think that NATO may not survive the war. I think that Ukraine will prevail, but that then the task is going to be not just rebuilding Ukraine, but also designing the new security system. And that's going to be the great task that the peacemakers at the end of the war face. Do we do a Congress of Vienna and buy 50 years of peace, or do we do a Versailles and basically make it possible to pencil in the date of the next war in your pocket calendar?
Let's go to Washington. Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.